It's the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today is Dr. Cecilia Rouse, Chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors. A conversation coming up in just a moment. First, let's go to the Chair of the Federal Reserve. That's Jerome Powell, who just recently talking about the unprecedented times and why they're raising lending rates.
It's really essential, particularly for the labor market. If you think about it, look, if you look at the last cycle, we had a very, very longest expansion cycle in our recorded history. And in the last 2-3 years, you had the benefits of this tight labor market going to people in the lower quartiles. And it was, you know, racial wealth and income, not wealth, but income gaps were coming down, wage gaps. So it's a really great thing. We'd all love to get back to that place. But to get back to anything like that place, you need price stability.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Dr. Cecilia Rouse, who's chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
Well, let's talk first about jobs report that's just rolled out, and some good news, really, when we start breaking that down. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. The jobs report suggests the labor market continues to heal nicely. The 428,000 jobs were created in April. That brings us to over 500,000 jobs on average created per month in the last 3 months. And that job growth was broad-based. In fact, there was no major sector that saw employment fall. So that is really, it's good news. We're about 95% of the way back in terms of employment of prime age workers from the past year. Unemployment rate held steady at 3.6%, which is really very quite low. And so this was overall a very strong report that suggests that the labor market continues to rebound very nicely.
I would imagine, as an economist, seeing what you've seen over the last 5 to 10 years, in one sense, it's got to be a bit overwhelming because this is a place we've never seen in our lifetimes. But it's got to be encouraging to give you the opportunity to move into some uncharted territory. I mean, is that kind of exciting?
So, look, it's exciting in the sense that it's exciting to work for a president who's very focused on supporting the American people. He wants to, as he puts it, build this economy from the bottom up, middle out. He wants to ensure that we have robust economic growth and that that growth is more widely shared. So, for example, he's very focused on rural communities. So we know that more jobs were created in rural communities in the last year than any other year in the last 2 decades. When it comes to investments that he wants to make, for example, we just passed the bipartisan infrastructure law. Congress passed that law and the president signed it late last year. And that's the law that will invest in roads and bridges and bring broadband to rural communities and elsewhere. It will also take lead out of pipes and all over the country. But we understand that the federal government doesn't always get to all corners of the country as it should. So he's actually tasked his cabinet to be out in the rural community. There was a rural infrastructure tour that many of the cabinet members made recently to ensure that rural communities are also able to take advantage of these kinds of investments. So this is an exciting time because the pandemic was just so harmful to us all psychologically, to us economically, but we have a president who's really focused on getting us through this in a way that benefits all Americans.
Glad you brought the president into this because one of the chief roles, I think, of the White House Council of Economic Advisors is that economic report of the president. I'm sure you touched on supply chain disruptions in that report.
We did. In fact, the economic report of the president is an annual report. The president writes a bit, and then the Council of Economic Advisors has the rest of it. And we have an entire chapter devoted to supply chains. What are they? How did we get here? What can we be doing to help them work more effectively? And one of the things that we document is that over the past several decades, supply chains have become more diverse and much more complex. and that many companies do not have full visibility into their full supply chains, and many of them have become more vulnerable to things like climate disasters, to things like a global pandemic, and that it's important for private firms to have more resilient supply chains so that they're better able to withstand even hurricanes, earthquakes, pandemics. But there's also a role for the federal government in helping them to do so. Your people, in the rural sector, and farmers know this firsthand, just how important they are. And so the federal government is here to ensure that we can make sure that they're as resilient as possible. In fact, if I might say, the president is in Ohio today, where he's visiting a plant that is investing in additive manufacturing that does 3D printing. And the whole purpose is to highlight the Bipartisan Innovation Act, which is funds to invest in these kinds of innovative manufacturing and other technologies, which will be beneficial to people everywhere in this country as we make our supply chains much more resilient and adaptable by using technologies that don't require, say, 3 years in advance purchasing before a part can arrive for replacement.
I had a chance to watch a video recently. You were featured with the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research, and the focus there was how the public and private sectors can work together to fuel that long-term economic growth. So this is really within your wheelhouse here as we talk about this, right?
Absolutely. Look, the president is a capitalist. I believe in markets, so this is not about being socialist. But what we know is that the private sector working on its own won't make the kinds of long-term investments in infrastructure, physical infrastructure, in people, in basic science that are so critical to long-term economic growth. So what we know is that we need to have the public sector and private sector working together so that the public sector makes investments, the private sector can really capitalize on some of those investments and bring it to scale. That the vaccine technology, the mRNA is a good example, that basic science was actually funded by NIH and federal funds, and then the private sector could really take it to benefit from that and take it to scale. And we have all benefited from those investments in a way that is very cost beneficial from the public perspective. So this president really understands that over the last three decades, as we've had policymaking that has really shunned the public sector's role in ensuring we have robust economic growth that is widely shared, that we are looking to make those kinds of investments that make our economy just work better, much more efficiently.
Maybe this last question, and I know your time is very limited here, but I think a lot of times we'll look into the rearview mirror, and you're already looking down the road. So if you don't mind, let me just throw this last question out, the future and what you're seeing here. Are you excited about what's on the horizon for the U.S.?
I am excited about what's on the horizon. It's going to be bumpy in the very short term, given that we are still working through a pandemic and we have Russia's war on Ukraine. But I am excited. We know that we've just made a historic investment in our physical infrastructure. We know that we have a president who's really focused on making the kinds of investments to help families lower costs for childcare, to make investments in education, to lower costs for prescription drugs. And we had such rapid growth last year that we have some resilience to withstand some of the headwinds that will be thrown at us or that will come our way due to the war Russia's war in Ukraine and the kinds of policymaking that the Federal Reserve Board will do in order to address inflation. So I am optimistic. I believe that the U.S. has so much potential and that we can be making the kinds of smart investments that we need in order to have sustainable growth that generates sustainable wage increases for workers, and that is more widely shared.
Thank you so much for your time, for your work there, and will you come back and see us somewhere down the road?
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.
Dr. Cecilia Rouse is chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors. joining us on today's Agribusiness Report.
You don't just farm for you. There's generations before you and generations that will come after. You live up to legacy as much as you build one for the future to come. And it's why our all-new Gleaner S9 Series Combines blend technology and know-how to give you the very best in control, comfort, and combine performance. It's the next generation Gleaner for the next generation of farming. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
Cotton growers, take out yield-robbing nematodes with an in-furrow application of Averland FC from Vive Crop Protection. A cost-effective solution, Averland FC fights early-season nematodes for healthier seedlings and stronger plant stands. Averland FC is the only abamectin product registered in-furrow for nematodes in cotton, and it's compatible with other crop inputs. To learn more, talk to your retailer or visit vivecrop.com. Averland FC is a restricted-use product. Read and follow label instructions.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Brendan Carr's an FCC commissioner on getting broadband to every American.
We've got 10 times that amount of money that's already been appropriated or budgeted for the agencies. And I'm very concerned that we're going to flash forward a couple of years. The $800 billion is going to be gone, and we're still going to have a significant portion of the digital divide that we didn't close. Over a year ago now, I think a year and a half ago at this point, July of 2021, I sent letters to all the agencies that you mentioned that have funds, Treasury, Agriculture, Education, Commerce, and I just asked a couple basic questions. You know, one, you know, how are you distributing these funds? What, you know, maps or other data are you using to distribute the funds? You know, are we fully coordinated? Half of them never responded, and that includes significant numbers of follow-up, you know, emails. Hey, just making sure you got this email, no response, or, yeah, let's talk, you know, schedule a date and then say, hey, we got to reschedule it. So I call that getting hit up with the okie doke. Yeah, okay, we'll meet, we'll talk. And so that gives me a little bit of pause. And then the answers that I did get didn't really give me a lot of comfort either. You know, I don't think we're using a single map, which we at the FCC should get done the maps. We can drive all these funding decisions through that.
So how can that divide be bridged?
You know, I think number one is on the policy perspective, apart from the coordination challenge I think we still have, one, we have to prioritize unserved. And these are communities that have 0 megabits per second over 0 megabits per second. There's still too many of them in this country. And I understand the desire to get everybody to gigabit speeds. I understand the desire to get, you know, multiple choices for your broadband dollars. But we have to elevate and prioritize those communities that are truly on the wrong side of the digital divide. We've got to prioritize there. I don't think we're doing that across a lot of measures, in part because we're defining lack of service as potentially places that have, you know, almost 80 over 20. And we're treating them the same from a prioritization mechanism as those with 0 over 0. That makes no sense in my mind. So I think we've got to prioritize unserved. We've got to get the maps done. You know, we got to continue to grow our workforce to get these builds done. We've got a shortage on the tower climber side. We've got a shortage on, you know, fiber splicers. We've got a shortage across the board. I've been working to try to address that, you know, ones and twos here, standing up community college programs to grow our tower workforce in particular. And we need some infrastructure reform as well. Because if we're just pouring $800 billion out there without further streamlining, we're basically just jumping on the gas and the brakes at the same time. We want these dollars to actually go into the ground, connecting communities. So I think there's a lot we can do from, you know, unserved, better maps, expanding workforce, infrastructure, and also supply chain. You know, we have issues, obviously, across the economy with supply chain right now. Okay. As you put this money into the economy, it is going to take up a lot of the resources that are going to be necessary to complete these builds.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton, bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest, Dr. Cecilia Rouse, chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors.
Why sorghum?
I think sorghum is a smart choice for growers because it just fits well with our limited moisture. There's a lot of improvement the last few years. It's just been a really good crop for us. It just works.
Sorghum has the ability over many crops to sit and wait on moisture, so it's a smart choice there.
Sorghum is a smart choice because it is flexible and tough. It's a good crop.
Rain or shine, sorghum is the smart choice.
You've been around the farming business for a while now, so you've got a pretty good idea of how hard most tractors work or don't work. And almost certainly you've heard of Fendt. From top to bottom, Fendt makes the most innovative, most cost-efficient tractors in the world. Like the Fendt 900, the ultimate row crop tractor. Isn't it time you discovered the difference between a good tractor and a great one? Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Nathan Symington is a commissioner with the FCC, looking into receiver interference, especially with radios.
This is one of the best ideas that I've ever had. And I can say that because exactly what I did is I took the TAC reports from 2013 to 2016 and filed off the serial numbers more or less, and then, you know, and then got them back in the record. In all seriousness, there's been a significant scientific and engineering effort for some time to determine how to resolve some of the problems with entrenched poor quality receivers. Poor quality receivers is always a little bit of a judgment call because, you know, how do you balance it against price, how do you balance it against performance, how do you balance it against other criteria. But there's no doubt that there are a lot of services out there where the receivers have not kept pace in terms of spectral efficiency with what you see in sectors where that's more prioritized, like wireless mobility. What I'd like to see come out of the proceeding is an attempt to address this question without getting too programmatic and telling receiver manufacturers how to do their jobs.